Welcome to Gola. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, cookbook author, and digestion enthusiast.
It's true, actually. I'm Danielle Caligari, professor of Italian at Dartmouth College and a certified specialist of wine. And I have to say that on the scale of being appetized versus digested, I'm probably more excited about the aperitivo, but digestivi is all yours, Katie. You're the queen. I'm leaning in. Why are we talking about this anyway?
Well, we're talking about this because we love spreading the gospel of Italian artisanal ingredients and products. So we got together with our friends at Amphora Wines in Amphora Wine Merchants, to be precise, in Oak Park, Illinois, and our buddy Randall Bush at Tenzig Wine and Spirits in Chicago. And we're putting together this digestivo box of three digestive liqueurs that you can purchase and drink along with us. We've also got an aperitivo box, so you can listen to that episode too and order that if you'd like. And we just really, we're so concerned about your digestion, guys. It's like been probably like a very decadent winter on your table, if it's anything like mine. And we need to know that you're digesting properly. And the quickest way to guarantee that is to provide you with a digestif at the end of the meal. That's the quickest way I know how.
It's the only way.
Well, you know, I've been giving a lot of Zoom cocktail seminars lately, and it's the most fun. I do not know how enthusiastic people are about the like rant I go on about how important digestion is and how everyone needs to like stop mixing like meat and fish at the meal because they don't get along in your tummy and then digestion problems ensue. I think it's scintillating conversation. I try to read the faces of my guests. I think they like it. I don't know. But, you know, we both have spent the better part of our adult lives in Italy. So considering digestion as a major driving force in our food and drinking choices is a no-brainer for us. It guides my decisions at the table all the time. When I come back to, you know, the U.S. where I was born and raised, sometimes those rules go out the window, you know what I mean? But I still do keep the rules and regulations of dining and drinking in the back of my mind, no matter where I am. And so that's why I am so excited to talk to you about the wonderful world of digestivi.
Yeah, well, I'm always excited to drink with you, Katie, be it virtually or together. And I'm always excited to try something new. But I agree with you that right now, digestivi and our companion piece here, aperitivi, are especially important. Partly because of what you said, we're at the end of the year, we've been overindulging probably. Most people have been sheltered in place or maybe even quarantining for long stretches of this year. A lot of us have sort of mitigated some of the loneliness and isolation of those feelings by eating well or maybe even a little too well, and could probably do with the medicinal properties of these drinks, of which there are many, both documented and sort of historically perceived or culturally understood. But they also play a role in the kind of social exchange of the meal and the elements that we are always trying to turn to when it comes to what it means to develop culture around the table and through food and beverage. And digestivi are about not getting up from the meal and leaving right away, not running away from your dining companions, not giving, you know, putting the last bite in your mouth, rolling over and going to sleep. They're about lingering. They're about relaxing. They're about giving yourself and your body the time to digest literally and metaphorically. So as you say, worrying about making sure people don't have belly aches is one part of it, but also worrying that people take the pleasure and the satisfaction out of the meal and let that be digested at that kind of intellectual level as well. And so that's maybe the most, you know, the biggest reason that I'm so excited to be diving into some of these Italian after dinner drinks with you, thanks to the help of our friends, as you mentioned, Adrian and Randall, and sharing them with everyone who's listening, who should order these packs, or if they can't get their hands on them, find some other digestive drinks and make sure that you extend your meal. Don't just throw down your napkin and go, you know, watch 300 episodes of something on Netflix until you're in a coma. Think about what made your meal enjoyable. Have a conversation, even if it's basically with yourself.
Listen, have a conversation with the bottle or something, you know, make it interesting.
Exactly. So Katie, you know, what are digestive drinks? What do we have in front of us? What are they going to do? What do they have in them? Why are Italians so obsessed with them?
So digestivi, huge category. It includes a wide range of drinks. Amaro, a bittersweet liqueur, is a major category. You also have limoncello, which is a lemon or other citrus flavor cellos. There is genciana, which is gentian root macerated in spirit and then sweetened and diluted to about 40% alcohol by volume. There is mirto, which is made from common myrtle. Rosoli also, another sort of like single, more or less like single ingredient steeped in liqueur or steeped in pure alcohol, I should say. We're going to be tackling amaro in two forms and mirto, which I'm very excited about. The first amaro is taking us way up north to the Italian region of Valle d'Aosta. This is the only region whose name I cannot pronounce after almost 18 years in Italy. It still is elusive. Valle d'Aosta. Valle d'Aosta. Did I do it?
You did it. You nailed it. I think we have established this already elsewhere, but I kind of want to underline it right here. That is the only region of Italy that I have not spent time in. Is that still true for you? Have you been there?
I've never been there. I think about it a lot, but I've never gone.
If anyone listening wants to subsidize a tasting trip for me and Katie, we will do a whole series of podcasts running around Val d'Aosta with, I think, probably me driving because we don't trust Katie to not bang up our rental car. And with all of the best liqueurs in the lower Alpine region of this far northwest corner of Italy. Not having been there, I nonetheless have spent plenty of time on the Alpine border of Italy in the northwest and in the northeast. And the amaro that we're tasting here immediately evokes those spaces for me. Katie, what are you smelling off the top of this?
Oh, I mean, I would just say that like this is a total journey through the Alpines. Getting a lot of like wild flowers, bitter astringent roots, the wormwood vibe for sure. And then some other things that were a little bit more surprising to me, Chinese rhubarb and some, I'm not even sure how to say it, just like the region, quinchona, a South American ingredient.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's right.
No, I already drank my shot. I'm going in for more. Sorry, I just wanted to let you guys know.
Yeah, get in there, get in there. The other thing that the Amaro Alpe has is the genipi. I'm trying to see if I'm saying that correctly in English. I think it's the same.
I think it's genipi, right?
Genipi? Okay, yeah. In Italian, it's genipi. But in any case, it's really, really earthy and foresty. It basically kind of tastes like a Christmas tree in a glass, so it's perfect for this time of year.
It's such a festive flavor. I'm digging it. It's also not super sweet. Like a lot of the major Amaro brands have such a high sugar content because they are trying to play down the bitterness of the drink for, you know, wider appeal. But I think that often really covers the flavors. And here you just get such like a profound, clean, round depth. And, you know, probably some of that roundness and depth is due to the production methods in which they infuse spirit with a litany of roots and herbs and spices, and then distill a portion of that. So the alcohol is being distilled a second time with those aromatics and then introducing that back into the base infusion. So it really creates like a softer overall impact.
Yeah, I think that's right, Katie. I would also point out that you used the word clean before, and I don't think that is a note that jumps to mind often when I get into digestivi, but that immediately was coming off of my pen onto my little notebook here. This tastes clean, like an alpine stream almost. Like that was the first thing I thought of, like kind of cool running water underneath the kind of fresh pine scents and the minty, even spearmintiness of it. Yes. I mean, it tastes shockingly fresh, and the bitterness is very much present, but definitely softened by all of that. I'm really enjoying this, I have to say. I've had quite a bit of digestif in my life, thanks to all of the overeating and overdrinking that I've done, often with you there. But this is the kind of thing that you can feel those kinds of digestive properties. The alcohol is definitely up, got to be nearing 40% here, I'm guessing.
38,
yeah. It's really has that nice tingliness, and you know, you can sense it getting the, you know, sort of cleaning your mouth out of the fat that's lingering from the last bites of the meal, and helping your stomach to settle. But you can also feel surprisingly refreshed from it. It's a lovely balance, really, really delicate.
I'm just loving this so much.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish this glass too. Cool.
I know. This is one of those tastings where we're actually really not so much tasting and drinking.
Good joke, that time of year, it's holidays.
I know, exactly. Stop me. Well, you know, so speaking of this class of Amari, we started way up in this this edge of Northern Italy in Valle d'Aosta. And now we're going to leap all the way down to not just the bottom of the peninsula, not just the toe of the boot, not just the little soccer ball that the boot is kicking, but to the islands off the coast of that island. So we're moving to Favignana in an archipelago off the west coast of Sicily, closest to a place you will be familiar with if you know a little bit about Italian wine and spirits, Marsala, known for its aged aromatized wines. But we're drinking something that's also an Amaro, and so it's sort of giving us a thread to follow, but with this incredibly different terroir and this incredibly different atmosphere, we're imagining that this Amaro is going to taste pretty different.
Yeah, the full name is Centonze Amaro Rizza Liquor. So the islands off the west coast of Sicily, Trapani and Marsala, some of them are pretty wild. Favignana is definitely civilized. Pull into the port and it's this sort of huge semicircular bay that's dominated by a giant tonnara, a tuna processing plant, which is now a museum and I think some regional government offices, but used to be one of the major hubs where the Florio family had the sort of monopoly on tuna fishing in that part of Italy. And, you know, once you get out of the main town, there are all sorts of like herbs and wild plants and wild fruits growing all over the place. And this Amaro incorporates some of those. So really sort of evokes the land there. It's sweetened with local honey, which I think is really fun. And you definitely get that sort of honey note on the palate.
Definitely. It's the first thing you can smell. Yeah.
It's very minty, which always, you know, when I go to Favignana, I always rent a bicycle. That's the best way to get around. And as you're like driving, riding down the street and you've got to sort of like move over to let cars pass, your tires crush mint, which kicks up this really wonderful aroma. There's also some rosemary and aloe vera in here. It's very herbaceous, like very herb heavy, as opposed to the more varied palate of the Amaro Alpe. I really do like the way that this channels the like honey and herbs of the Sicilian islands.
It's incredible how many of these notes you can clearly define here. I on the nose, you could get at least six of those, I think, pretty quickly. And as we're tasting this, I'm thinking to myself that this would be really good practice for people who are wanting to brush up on their table wine tasting skills, because particularly the Amaro that we have in front of us, but I think everything that we've tasted through in terms of the digestivi, as we went through and selected what we would share with our listeners in this podcast and in the pack that they can get from our friend Adrian at Anfura, and also in terms of the aperitivi that we've looked at, the variety of distinct flavors that come out are so much easier to parse in a way, which is, I guess, you know, something that I knew all along, but hadn't really registered consciously until right now as you're talking about it. Because as soon as you pour a little bit of this lovely Centonze Amaro Rizza, there's no question that you'll get honey. And I would even go so far as to say that you might right away notice that this is what we would call, what do we call it in English? Like single varietal honey, single plant honey?
I guess. I don't know what the name is.
Anyway, it's like, sure. You know, honey single that's, varietal. You know, where the bees are pollinating like one kind of confined area, and so are, you know, kind of picking up on the flowers, in this case the Cardo di Favignana, and so have like it kind of has a very specific flavor, and then that mint unquestionably, but also I think the rosemary flavor is pretty notable, and the brininess of this underneath it all, right? I mean, I think I don't often note a kind of saline quality to my Amari, but this would not have surprised me tasting it blind to learn that it is produced on an island, put it that way, on a small island.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we're drinking this Amaro just like we did the other one, certainly after dinner, certainly allowing the body to work through digesting what has been consumed. But when else might you enjoy an Amaro, or is there another context that you would maybe think of pouring this into your glass, Katie?
Yeah, you know, I sometimes make Amaro cocktails. Like there's a Chinar Spritz, for example, in Tasting Rome, just substituting an artichoke, mainly artichoke-based Amaro with for the red bitter liqueur. Yeah, there are also some other, you know, cocktails. I like to mix Amaro with whiskeys, bourbons. It's not my favorite use, but sometimes I'll introduce Amaro in the place of red bitter liqueur in a spritz. I also like a paper plane, which is equal parts bourbon, the Amaro of your choice. I like a lighter bodied one. This one would work perfectly. Cappelletti aperitivo and lemon juice. You just combine all those in a cocktail shaker, 3/4 filled with ice, shake until chilled, strain into a chilled coupe glass, and call it a day.
Nice, really good one. It's almost like you read my mind. I literally just spoke with a friend about what kinds of spirits or amari or liqueurs could be swapped in and out of a paper plane, especially this time of year. I love it. I totally agree with this. And I do think that anything that's working with traditional American, specifically Kentucky style bourbon, would be delicious with this. I look forward to actually just experimenting a little bit now that we have some of this at home, at our respective homes, and seeing what comes up. And, you know, as a caveat or an asterisk there, look out in the show notes for the details of what these bottles are called, the links to our friends who will be providing them to anyone in the greater Chicago area, and hopefully helping you to find them elsewhere. But also, we'll throw out some ideas for these, Katie, through our usual methods.
Sounds good. Ready for the next final?
I sure am. And that's what I was about to say. When we talk about doing things differently, when we talk about how an Amaro might be used another way, we're also kind of opening ourselves up into a conversation about, you know, what else is part of this greater family of after dinner drinks. And that brings us to this next drink. And I'm sort of pointing to it as a favorite of ours because it's also associated with one of our favorite places to explore, and that is Sardinia.
You know I love Sardinia so, so, so much. And yeah, when you visit Sardinia, you always, always, always end the meal with a digestivo. It's, you know, 95% of the time it's mirto, which is made from a plant called common myrtle. It grows wild all over Sardinia and Corsica, its neighbor to the north. There are a few different styles of mirto. Some are made from the reddish berries of the myrtle plant. Some are made with white myrtle berries. Some are made with just the leaves, kind of like a bay leaf style infusion. And then sometimes you got the berries and the leaves together. So it kind of depends on the producer. But generally speaking, the flavor profiles are really, really similar from one to the next. Mirto is known for its so-called balsamic flavors, very herbaceous, medicinal, but in a great way. So this Mirto is made from Sardinian ingredients. It is produced in collaboration with a winemaker in the Alto Piano del Planargia, which is not far from Bosa, so in western Sardinia. And they collaborate with Susanna Gualco of Distilleria Gualco in Piedmont. So it's this actually like quite shocking partnership between Piemontese producers and Sardinian ones, which is not a common meeting.
No, it sure isn't. And it's as shocking, you point out, if you exactly, it's right. If you go to Sardinia, you will fast become a connoisseur of Mirto because it will be absolutely everywhere. People will offer you their family's homemade version in their private homes. All restaurants will have it available. Usually they'll just leave some on the table after your meal for you to enjoy at your discretion. You'll find it in every shop. It's everywhere. You'll see the Mirto, the plant, the myrtle plant growing all over. It's everywhere. As soon as you leave a Sardinian context, like so many Sardinian things, you will suddenly find yourself at a loss for where you could possibly source Mirto or its kind of brethren. It is not something that you find a lot of different places. And that's the kind of second aspect of why we were so excited to get our hands on this and why we were grateful to our friend Randall for sourcing it for us. Because if you're not, for example, in 2020, traveling to Sardinia for vacation or exploration or research, and you want a taste of Mirto, you're going to have to dig for it. That's for sure. It's not all over the place. It's kind of maybe the kind of most specific of the things that we've been tasting through here. And it brings to life this very specific territory. And as I'm tasting this one, Katie, I'm immediately getting the sense of the two sides of the coin that you've described, both the bacche, the berries of the plant, and the leaves here. It's a little green in a nice way. The color of it is, you know, if you're at a friend's house in Sardinia, you may get a Mirto that is basically dark blue to purple to even almost black from the fruit being left to macerate in it. This instead has a nice kind of caramelized amber color, and it brings a really nice balance between that fresh fruitiness, berry flavor, really dark berry flavor, that then also has that leafy underbrush tone that's really sophisticated, actually.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this. And, you know, when you are in non-Sardinian parts of Italy, you will see Zeta Piras brand Mirto at the, like, specifically Sardinian fish restaurants, which are very numerous in the Italian capital. But yeah, it's definitely not something you're going to find on the regular. And this is so different from what I typically am served in Sardinia, which looks like you kind of emptied out a blueberry pie into a glass, which I love. But yeah, this also isn't like, I'm going to taste it again. Hold on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty sweet, I've got to say. It's a, but maybe not as sweet as like the sort of more mainstream brands. It's a surprising Mirto to me. Really soft, actually.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's subtle. I think it does have a more sweetness. I think that we're tasting that even more distinctly because we just came off of our tuamari that have stronger bitter chords. But I think the Mirto is kind of, I mean, it literally tastes like a cherry on top of all the tasting we've been doing, only not cherry, a Mirto on top. And it's lovely, it's delicate, it's pretty. And I think the alcohol content is definitely still adequate here. It's, you know, this is also coming down in an ABV. It's only at 30%. So I think it's really kind of a quiet good night for us after all the other drinking we've been doing, which is probably a good idea, frankly.
Yeah, and I would say that's a solid 10 ABV points below the Mirto that you're going to be served at any random Sardinian trattoria, which you really do feel, which is absent here, that like the heat of the pure alcohol, and that, you know, I think probably because the distillery in Distilleria Gualco in Piedmont is so well versed in sort of moderating the heat of alcohol for their various liqueurs and grappas, they're applying that philosophy to their Mirto production.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's what I'm tasting here as well. What I also excited about is the fact that this sort of completes our little map of the peninsula here, because we started up in the far north at the Alps. We flew all the way down to the Aegean Islands of Sicily. And now we're at a marriage between Piedmont and Sardinia, sort of uniting the west and center of Italy. And so we're reminded by tasting this also of the fact that while all of these can be, are regionally specific and have characteristics that are, or that have the notable characteristics that attach them to a specific place and the things that grow in that specific place, they're also part of this larger universal peninsular practice where all Italians, wherever they are going to be expecting to have a digestivo when they finish their meal. And so if you want to enjoy a proper Italian meal, you should really consider the digestivo as an essential part of that. Your antipasto, your primo, your secondo, your contorno, your dolce are all there and necessary, but digestivo is equally a part of that. And you wouldn't conclude a meal, you wouldn't say goodnight to anyone without enjoying a last toast.
Yeah, I mean, a very long drawn-out meal would be bookended by the aperitivo and the digestivo, but not all across Italy. That's I feel very secure saying that the digestivo is that indispensable part of the the alcohol, in addition to the wine. The aperitivo, most people could live without it, but the digestivo is essential. You know, you got to digest after all.
Exactly. Well, we should leave our listeners to digest, but we should remind them that they can pick up a pack of these three digestivi that we just tasted together and that we recommend as a kind of introduction to or continuation of your knowledge of Italian spirits and practices at Amphora Wine in Oak Park, and hopefully many other places if that doesn't work in terms of your personal geographic location. They can hear from us and see what else we're drinking and talking about on our social media channels. I'm at Dr. Caligari's Cabinet. Katie, where can they find you?
At Katie Parla.
And we recommend that everyone pour themselves a nice sip of something. Toast to having made it through a nice meal, hopefully, and maybe most of 2020 at this point, or even gotten into 2021, depending on when you're listening. And continue to explore the podcast that we have on aperitivi, digestivi, and many other things that you can drink and learn about history and culture of Italy through with us on Gola, anchor.fm/Gola.
And don't forget the Nuts for Nucilo episode is tight.
Yes, a last recommendation. Allora, ci sentiamo presto.
Se beccamo, raga.